Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to tell you before we start this that this Sunday, I'll be at the American Visionary Art Museum's 2012 State of Our Earth Eco Conference. It starts at 10 a.m., continues throughout the day. The conference is open to the public. It's taking place at the museum, 800 Key Highway in Baltimore's Inner Harbor. We'll hear stories from Native American and Indigenous artists and see presentations from top scientists and ecologists, award-winning films, and much more. There's more information and directions at avm.org, avm.org, and join me there. We'll have many other people, and it's open to the public. Just show up and be part of the day. We are going to spend this first hour talking about the growing Occupy movement in the city of Baltimore. Last week, Lila Caro was going to be evicted from her home, have her house foreclosed upon. It's happened to many people, and many people that we know in this world right now in Baltimore and around the country, that people have homes with mortgages, with balloon payments that people got but didn't really expect would be affected so badly by them, have not been able to keep up with mortgages. Many people whose homes are underwater, which means that you bought a house for X amount of dollars and now it's worth $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 more than what you bought it for. So that crisis is taking place. But before she could be evicted that day, the folks who organized Occupy Baltimore occupied the space in front of her house to not let the sheriffs come in. She since has been evicted and lost her home, and has actually one of the people who helped defend her house, one of the occupiers, has invited her to stay with her, and she's now living with one of the occupiers as well. Lolly Carr is with us, a West Baltimore homeowner who I've just described. Michelle Moore is with us, who's an occupier homes organizer here in Baltimore City. And Mike McGuire is with us, who was, now yesterday, I'll describe Mike McGuire in a minute here, but yesterday there was a huge demonstration at the site where the new youth jail is proposed to be built. People walked inside the space that is owned by the state and erected a structure that would be the model of a school building in the middle of the lot that they were told they were not allowed to do. Six people were arrested that day. Mike McGuire was one of them. He was arrested at yesterday's protest. It was a protest that brought in a cross-section of Baltimore, white and black, young and old, to stand and say we need a different kind of system in society. And Mike joins us here today. And once again, the Reverend Heber Brown joins us. Pastor Brown, of course, is pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in Baltimore. He has moved with the Occupy movement from the beginning, especially as it relates to the issues facing the African-American community and poor people in the city. He blogs at faithinactiononline.com. And has been a guest on the show many times. And Heber, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
And the number is 410-319-8888. We wanted to create a dialogue today between some of the Occupy movement and some of our elected officials. We'll do that towards the end of the program, at least one of our state delegates, and to have a conversation. And then in the coming weeks, we are going to invite on city councilmen, state delegates, state senators. If the mayor will come, we'd have her as well. If the governor wants to join us, we'd have him as well. To talk with this growing movement in our community about what really is our vision for the city and state that we live in. And so I want to welcome you all to this program. Good to have you on the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Number is 410-319-8888. Join us here. Join us here for this conversation. Layla.
Yeah.
So, Layla Carrot, tell us first your story. I mean, what happened to you and how you got involved with Occupy and this house of yours that was being taken back by the bank?
Very shortly, I had bad mortgage, two mortgages, 80-20 with ARM, which means there it was built a possibility on the fifth year to the interest to become 14.5%, which is very high interest. And somebody asked me why I took these mortgages, because they told me that I can always refinance, change. And I was hoping that I will. And when I start asking for modification, the bank, the servicer of the bank, GMAC, the mortgage holder is Deutsche Bank, and GMAC is the servicer, they told me I cannot do anything, I cannot receive anything from them because I am not in default. I have to stop paying. So this is how I got into this situation. I stopped paying. And on the fourth month, exactly how the law in Maryland says, they recorded the first foreclosure, because in that case appeared this notorious guy, Jeffrey Stephan, who, without reading my paperwork, without checking that we are in process of conversation, negotiations about my modification, he signed the paperwork, he appointed trustees, and the sale started. They sold twice the house. They had four foreclosures recorded. Unbelievable what happened. And I went to these guys because...
to the Occupy movement.
Yeah. I didn't pay attention. I saw their tents on McAlden Square, but I didn't pay attention too much because always in a hurry to go to work, from work back home. And I was in touch with people from New York, Occupy, and they told me, go to them. They'll help you. So this is how I found them.
Now, how did you get in touch, and why did you get in touch with the people in New York? Had you been following this?
It happened that I had have their lady that I know back from my country. I was born in Bulgaria, which is in north of Greece, in southeastern Europe. Yeah. So she advised me to do that, and I did right, by the way. To tell you the truth, I was very down before I knew them, before they came into my house, before they started supporting me. I was so down, I didn't know what to do. I was looking like a stupid in one point, and I didn't know how and get to what to do. I didn't know. With them, my hope came back because I saw that it's not this scary. Even right now, I'm on the street. I just made my new license. I don't have passport yet, and etc. But I feel very different way because I know I have support. I can trust them.
Because all your belongings and your identification and your papers and other personal items were still in the house, locked up.
No, they destroyed them.
They destroyed them.
Yeah, the sheriff told me that he will let me take the necessary from the house first. They came not on the day of the eviction, how it was scheduled. They came in another day. And I was expecting then that since it's a new day, new time, they will schedule that day and time and they will send me a new notice, but not in Baltimore, obviously. So they came unexpected, and I not just had my stuff not moved there, but it was moved, most of it I brought back because I had people in the house to have microwave, where to live, to lie down, to sleep, where to sit, you know, tables. I returned this back because I was expecting that it would take longer. And because he lied to me, and he was very rude, the same way the cleaning people acted with me. They lied to me, they were rude to me, and one of the guys, I explained to them, guys, there is a green bag. In there I have all my documents, and brown bag where I have my work assignments documents too, and one white bag with the stuff of my doggies. I have two Yorkies. Please, these are the most precious things to me. Give it to me. One of the young men was waving the green bag empty from the balcony of the house to show me that it's empty. Then he threw it away demonstratively, you know. Then he was walking around me talking, you don't owe anything anymore. Like it's the worst in the world to own something, you know. He put me on my place. So. And I think it's very bad that they... and have these young people on these positions. They teach them bad. Immediately, I like to tell you that I made my research. She reminded me about Chicago, Michelle, and I made my research, and there are two sheriffs there who refuse to do evictions. Mm-hmm. They are requiring from the banks to show them, to prove them that the eviction is legal. The sale is legal. In my case, it's not legal. The first time, the first sale, they didn't have... both times it was not illegal. I cannot... I'll tell you later why it's not illegal, but it was not illegal both times. So if they check this, they'll know immediately that not me to be evicted, not me to be... punished. The bank is who is in default. And except... So the results are... Yeah.
So this... So you weren't able to stop his eviction, Michelle, but...
No. We weren't able to stop, but we knew we needed to fight back. I mean, one of the reasons that Lila wanted to fight back is she wanted to show other people who are in similar situations that, you know, there's two things you can do. You can give up and hang your head, or you can fight back. And we did stop the eviction for one day, and I think that was, you know, a big organizational victory that, you know, we were able as volunteers to get 100 people out there who said, we're protecting this home. I think that, you know, it's really sad the way that Lila was treated the day after when they came to evict, and they didn't have to take her stuff. They they have three options. They can't do chattel evictions anymore. They can't put the stuff on the street, but they can give it back to the occupant. They could store it, or they can put it in a landfill or a dump. And it would have been very easy. She was there at the house. It would have been very easy for them to give her back the stuff, and they were just throwing it away because it means nothing to them.
They being the sheriff's department.
They being the people from the bank. The bank is Deutsche Bank, who are the trustees. Deutsche Bank, you know, we would rather see people like Lila in these houses than Deutsche Bank owning homes in our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Deutsche Bank is notorious for holding on to their REOs, like investment properties, and not fixing them up. They're being sued by the city of L.A. right now because the city is having to spend so much money maintaining Deutsche Bank properties. So we do feel like we were victorious, and like Lila says, you know, in Chicago there are sheriffs that are refusing to evict. Occupier Homes is not just a Baltimore thing. In Atlanta, I think either today or yesterday, they got BB&T to stop foreclosing on a church. It's a 108-year-old church in Atlanta, and it was hit by a hurricane or tornado, and they had some issues with the mortgage. And Occupy in Atlanta came and put tents up around the church, and now BB&T is trying to work out solutions that benefit the church and benefit the community.
So tell me, what is the connection here for you all and Heber when you see this going on, the locking of mortgages? We've talked in this house on this show before about the issue of housing in the city, abandoned houses, and what the Occupy movement can do. And for you, what is the connection to all this?
Well, for me, it's a personal connection, having family members who have gone through very similar instances of being evicted and going through foreclosure. And so I know just from my own family what that feels like and how difficult that is. And then also just as a follower of the way of Jesus, you know, I just can't imagine that Jesus would just look at people suffering in this type of way and just say, oh, well, somebody else will do it, or they'll be taken care of some other way. That's not the Jesus that I follow anyway. And so, you know, so I'm compelled to, because of personal reasons, because of my faith, but also just because of my conscience. I mean, I'm so thankful for Occupy Our Homes and all the folks involved. And I was there on the day where we had the rally on the front porch, and it was an amazing energy there, Mark.
You were there.
It was beautiful. The spirit right on that corner was amazing. There were people from all different walks of life there. We were singing together. We were praying together. We were just standing together. And I think that's one of the things that I said at the that day. I just commended you, Lila, for just speaking up and saying, I'm not going to take it silently. I'm not going to lay it down. Because, Mark, can you imagine how many of your listeners right now are going through the very same thing? And because of society's ways and cultures, we're shamed into silence and thinking that something must be wrong with me. I did something wrong. When the truth of the matter is that the table has been tilted in the direction to push you right on out of your home, as opposed to any person doing anything wrong. And so I thank Lila for just raising her voice, and for others who are listening. Raise your voice. There's power in our togetherness and our unity on this, and we don't have to just lay down and take it.
Let me ask you this question here, and we'll move on. And I want to say Delegate John Cardin's on the phone with us, who represents the 11th District in Baltimore County. And, John, I do know you just noticed you were on the phone already, and welcome. Good to have you on this on the show with us. We were hoping to have more councilmen and delegates and senators on, but we will in the coming weeks have to create this dialogue between people in the communities who are addressing these issues and our elected officials. And I think that dialogue has to take place in a very public way and in a good way. In a positive way, I think. But Heber, let me just ask a question before I turn to also let me welcome Nicole Cheatham here, a youth organizer with the Baltimore Outreach Project, who is a student of Baltimore City Community College. Good to have you in the studio, Nicole.
Thank you.
Good to see you. So, you know, I'm curious what you think about this movement that is kind of crossing a lot of lines here, racially, especially in this community.
Right.
And I know that you've been involved very deeply in struggles inside the African-American community, black community, for people to lift the community up together and make things happen. But and this movement is kind of crossing lines, haven't been crossed in a long time in this city, I think. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's an exciting time from my viewpoint. I mean, we were saying before the show that, you know, it's hard to keep up with all the new names and faces. And I think that's a good thing.
Uh-huh.
We are sharing space with people. You know, before all of this, you know, everybody kind of stayed in their own little corner and we pushed in our own little directions. But we're sharing space. And even in sharing space, we're bumping heads a little bit. We're disagreeing. We're trying to learn how to be together. We have different viewpoints, different philosophy, ideology, different religion, different moral conscience. Well, same moral conscience, but different religions
right,
and other
right.
things. But and I think it's messy, Mark. You know, it's not so clean and clear cut. You know, I've said stuff I'm sure that has offended some in the Occupy group, and they've said some stuff that's rubbed me the wrong way. But that's the beautiful mess of community, that sharing space together and working this all out. I think that's the first step of revolution right there.
Amen
just
to
saying that when we get together and we're courageous enough to get to know one another and bump heads and make up and agree to disagree but keep on walking in the same direction, the possibilities are endless. And I think we saw a little bit of that on yesterday with Mike, Nicole, and so many others. And so it's an exciting time, man. I love it. I'm glad to be alive right now.
And Mike McGuire, you were one of the six arrested.
Yes.
At the site.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened.
Well, we had a rally planned outside of Central Booking at 3:00. There were about 200 folks there. We marched from the 2-block distance between Central Booking and the proposed youth jail site, which is also relevant. Like, this is a whole cluster of jails.
Right. And Supermax is there. Yeah. The city jail is there.
And right. It's what's grown exponentially over the last 40 years in that part of Baltimore. It's this complex that keeps on growing. And the new youth jail that they're proposing is just one more growth, and in a growth that we want to detain because we don't want to keep infinite incarceration on the table as a solution for Baltimore. And that's very relevant. So then we walked this 2-block distance between Central Booking and the proposed youth jail site. There was a huge police presence there. And this was also another really phenomenal thing. There was this mobile incident command that was brand new, shining, sparkling, that was almost certainly bought with federal Homeland Security money and almost certainly cost over $1 million. It's high technology. It was brand new. And it's there for what? Like, it may be the first time they've ever used it, and they used it because we decided that we were going to go out to a vacant lot in East Baltimore where they're talking about building a youth jail and instead build a schoolhouse. And they mobilize, you know, I don't know how many salaries in the course of this week they're mobilizing to just hold down this gravel lot. And it's phenomenal. You know, I mean, six of us were processed through last night. But we get there, and this lot, which has been so poorly defended until yesterday, that there were gaping holes in the fence. There were no trespassing signs posted. There was a clipped lock sitting there on the gate. And we were able to just open up the gate and walk in. And we had a U-Haul sitting there with a school that we had prefabricated off-site and a bunch of other stuff in a big tent that we had been using down at McKeldin Square. And the police, even though they were all over the place, they were just sitting around looking happily. So we open up the gates. We charge out with all this stuff that was in the U-Haul and start assembling it all. There were a bunch of people that were committed to camping there overnight on the sidewalk. We were planning on camping on site, but it became clear that anyone that was on site was going to be arrested. And we wanted to be able to maintain both presences. We wanted to build that schoolhouse there. That was a central goal. That we wanted to show the city that even people with scant resources and limited imagination like us have more imagination than them in this stuff. And we wanted to create this dilemma for them. We wanted to create this clear crisis. It's schools or jails. And it's not just schools or jails. There's an infinite thing. I mean, we can talk about rec centers. We can talk, and this is a very important aspect for me. We can talk about the general thrust of what kind of development is happening in the city of Baltimore. And you look forward and you see where money is going and where money isn't going. Money's not going to schools. Money's not going to rec centers as we're talking about privatizing them. Money is going to building a youth detention facility if they're able to allocate it, which is up in the air right now. Money is going to and public resources are going to building casinos. You know, I've been scandalized since this casino debate started where folks were blackmailing us saying, we need to build these casinos or you're not going to have funding for education. So, like, we're building casinos. We're building Walmarts. Like, where are we going in this city? We're building a tomb for us as far as I can tell. If we project this out in 20, 30 years, it's not a city that I want to live in. So, like, all of this culminates into this event on Saturday. The mayor is having her third of three mayoral budget forums to try and get community sign-off on $52 million in budget cuts for the city of Baltimore in fiscal year 2013. And all of this week was building towards that because our overarching issues are where are we putting money, where are we not putting money, and how are we deciding it? Are these decisions reflecting what the will of Baltimore is? Because we don't think it is.
Let me also turn before we go to turn to John Cardin. I want to introduce everybody here. Nicole Cheatham. The Algebra Project has been a youth organization in the city for 10 years?
10 years.
10 years, right? And you've been an active student group demanding mm-hmm. social change. So talk about what you're seeing here.
Well, currently, the Algebra Project, we're dealing with overall youth issues as a whole. We're advocating a national student bill of rights that guarantees youth certain rights, well, educational rights that are guaranteed no matter what's going on with the budget, no matter what's going on with the federal budget or whatever the case may be. Students have these particular rights. So the jail issue falls under one of those rights as far as youth not being charged as adults. So the Baltimore Algebra Project, like I said, is just fighting for youth justice as a whole. Our organization is 100% youth-ran from the Board of Trustees down to our leadership committee, down to the tutors, the 2Ds. We're just an organization that see things that are systematically put in place to hinder the youth of Baltimore City, and seeing that, wanting to be that change, wanting to be that entity that people come to if there's an issue going on with youth in Baltimore City or around the country, period, that you can come to us and we'll be willing and able to move you forward with whatever is going on in your life.
You went to what high school?
Western.
You went to Western. Yeah, just, I couldn't remember. 410-319-8888. And let me, before we go to the phones, I want to welcome John Cardin, who's a delegate from District 11, Baltimore County. And John, I'm sorry you're the only elected official here today. That we wanted more to have a larger dialogue, but we'll do that in the future. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts. You just heard kind of a testimony from five people crossing all kinds of racial religious lines who make up Occupy Baltimore, who participated both in trying to stop Leela's eviction and in the occupation of where the detention center is going to be built. What your thoughts are at this point, hearing what they had to say.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mark. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Good afternoon, John.
Great. I very much enjoyed hearing from your guests, and I appreciate you bringing me on. I'm sorry that I'm the only elected official on today, but maybe we can change that in the coming weeks as the session moves on. A couple of reactions to some of the things that were said. First of all, I have always been a believer that that civil disobedience, and in this week of celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King, civil disobedience is a great way to try and raise issues, but it can't be the only way that we advocate for things. And I believe that when people come, whether it be to the legislature or to city council or to their elected officials, and work with them cooperatively and with the idea of compromise, that we can really accomplish great things, even if it is incrementally. That's number one. Number two is that specifically in terms of the Juvenile Justice Center, I have been and will continue to be, until somebody can prove it wrong, an advocate for looking for alternative ways to handle both youth offenders as well as adult offenders, and to try to figure out ways to decriminalize nonviolent crimes so that we can use what would be a more cost-effective as well as a more socially acceptable way of handling people who are violating rules, laws, and other things, instead of sending them to jail and actually, to be perfectly frank, paying tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to keep them in jail instead of figuring out other ways to bring them back into society and make them productive.
I'd like to get to the phones here and get some people in on conversation and let everybody respond mm-hmm. to our listeners who are calling in at 410-319-8888. We have 2 minutes to break. Do you want to take the break now and come back to our callers? Does that make more sense? Let's do that. We're going to take a very brief break. We'll come back to Clarence, who's our first caller up, at 410-319-8888 as we visit with folks who are part of the Occupy movement, and as well as Delegate John Cardin from the 11th District. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I will remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. We're talking with members of the Occupy movement who represent many sectors in our society here in Baltimore City. Last week, as many of you remember, they stood with and in front of a house that a bank was going to repossess. Lila Caro was the woman who owns that house. It was pushed out of her home. She joins us here today. She's a West Baltimore homeowner who was evicted from her foreclosed home despite the protest by Occupy Our Homes that postponed the eviction, and despite the fact that she was in negotiations to renegotiate her mortgage. Michelle Moore is with Occupy Homes, Our Homes organizer. Nicole Cheatham is with us. She's youth organizer with the Baltimore Algebra Project, a student at Baltimore City Community College. Mike McGuire, who was arrested, one of the six arrested yesterday, on the east side at where they're going to build youth detention center. He's also a member of the Red M's Collective. He's here with us in the studio. The pastor, Heber Brown, who is pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church on Belvedere Avenue in Baltimore, blogs at faithinactiononline.com. And John Cardin, Maryland State Delegate from District 11, Baltimore County. And as we were going to break, before we go to the phones here, at 410-319-8888, Pastor Brown was talking about his iPad was blowing up because of all the churches saying they want to be involved.
Well, I'm excited. so many of my colleagues and sisters and brothers in ministry are expressing interest and giving support and just giving voice. I mean, and that's a major thing as well, just for clergy just to speak to and give voice to some of these issues is very important. So I'm thankful for people like Reverend Walter Thomas Jr. We practically grew up together. Thank God for Pastor Drew, Kendall Ross, Reverend Donald Wright, Minister Daniel Kennedy, and there's so many others. Of course, Pastor Jamal Bryant was on recently and gave voice to this as well. And so the clergy and people of faith are coming together. And I was saying in the break as well, Mark, that even the Muslim community from Washington, D.C. is catching wind of what's going on with this youth jail, and they want to support and link up. And so it's some very exciting times for people of faith, for the faith community, to link up with Occupy Baltimore, Liberate Baltimore, and any other groups and really create the type of massive push that's needed to really make this thing possible. And I just want real quick for Delegate Cardin, I'm thankful for his words, and he's exactly right. You need to kind of utilize all the arrows in your quiver. And for the past 2.5 years, we've been doing just that. We've gone all the routes that they tell you to go. We've been writing letters. We've been testifying at hearings. We've been meeting with elected officials. All of the acceptable routes that they tell you that you have to do, we've done all of that. And so for us to talk now about taking over space, it means that we've gone all the routes that y'all said to go, and now you're forcing the hand of the community to dream up other creative avenues of grievance since your avenues didn't work for us. And
exactly.
So we'll keep on pushing in that direction until your avenues work for the people. We're going to create our own and be trailblazers.
Go ahead, John. John Cardin. Go ahead. Then we'll open the phones.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Look, I believe you got to use all the arrows in your quiver. One thing I'll say, though, regarding the gentleman who was arrested last night, is that if there's, as a lawyer as well as a delegate, if there's a fence around something, even if the lock is snapped or is open, probably means that you realize that you're going to get yourself into some trouble, which may have been the intention in the first place, but you got some great press doing it. I will say that.
410-319-8888 is the number here, and Clarence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon to Mr. Steiner and all of your guests.
Good afternoon, Clarence.
The reason I take a different approach to the whole thing, the reason Occupy should not be there if the elected officials whom we elect to foresee problems and take care of our society and our cities and our our local communities were doing their job in the first place, there would be no need for this. They need to be targeted by name wherever the chips may fall. Occupy should be in the form of a lawsuit against these organizations that are doing these things by these elected officials. People shouldn't have to be out there. If they were doing their job, there would be no need for it. And that's just my comment. Thank you.
What do you all think about that?
I kind of half agree and half disagree. I partially, like Heber was saying, that we do elect these officials to do the work for us, right? They're supposed to be for the people, by the people, right? We vote them in. They give us all of these promises, and then once they get there and they're actually elected, most of those promises go out the window. So I can understand where you're coming from, because like Heber said, we've been, you know, going down these avenues for the past 2.5 years, visiting politicians, going to hearings. We've actually done the work to get them to withhold on building the jail a year ago, and they promised to do that. They've stuck to their word. So things have been done, whereas though these politicians should feel the need, especially with the when the National Council on Crime and Delinquency came out with their report giving these different alternatives and different ways so that the jail doesn't have to be built. The politicians and the different delegates for the state of Maryland completely ignored, I guess, all of the pages of the report that talked about alternative ways so that the jail wouldn't be built, and just read and is giving us, you know, feedback on the 5 pages that talks about building the jail. So I agree with you that they should be doing their job, and if they're not, then we shouldn't reelect them. But in a world in which they give us these promises that they're going to do this and they're going to do that, there's nothing we can do if they don't live up to it except don't reelect them.
I guess, George, two things. And I was thinking about Lila Kara's position, having lost her home in West Baltimore. Two things came to my head. One was, what can the Occupy movement really do to prevent people like Lila from losing their homes and stopping the eviction on a more permanent basis, A? And B, I'm curious what it would take, or should we even have, a moratorium on homes being taken away until we get the crisis straightened out in this country with our banks and financial institutions. But go ahead, Michelle.
I mean, all around the country, people are moving for the banks to actually do something to help out the homeowners. People like Lila, she needs some sort of restitution because she had paid money down for a modification, and her foreclosure documents were robo-signed by a guy who admitted an affidavit that he didn't even look at what he was signing. But yet the foreclosure process continues, and the sheriff is willing to work for Deutsche Bank and the trustees, not for Lila Kara, a homeowner who's lived in her home for 6 years in Baltimore. So, you know, in Baltimore, predatory lending and foreclosures are not a new problem. There has been substantive change in Maryland. Lila got a adjustable rate, no interest only loan, which went up to 14.5%. She could not get that loan today. But yet nothing is being done to help all the people who were preyed upon by the banks during the housing boom. So what can we do for Lila Kara and people like her? I mean, Councilwoman Clark had a bill about 2 years ago,
right,
that would have extended the eviction process on foreclosed homes to 365 days.
Right.
And the reason she did that, you know, not to speak for Councilwoman Clark, but was to motivate the mortgage companies to actually modify the loans and make them affordable. Deutsche Bank, who, you know, owns the note of Lila's home, received $11.8 billion in TARP money. That's money that they could actually be spending on restructuring some of these loans. So that's what we're really pushing for, is, you know, for them to freeze the filed and unfiled foreclosures and to actually work on modifications, principal write-downs, ways to keep these homes affordable for people.
Can I jump in real quick? This speaks to both your question and the caller's question. I think one of the major things that we're talking about and where our strength comes from is that you know, we've surrendered a lot of our power over generations, over decades mm-hmm. and generations, and we've fallen out of the practice of using our collective power. And what Occupy is doing is really showing the threat that there is. And, you know, the Census Bureau is talking about 1 in 2 Americans that are at or near poverty. You know, that's a sleeping giant. And the reason that that's happening is because we've all been sleeping. And as folks are waking up, you know, the practice of power can be scary. It can be invigorating. But I think that's what we're talking about. And to what the caller was saying, you know, Occupy is one – the only way that anything like this is going to be successful is if Occupy is one part of a much broader movement of people working all kinds of channels. Occupy isn't going to file lawsuits. Occupy might lobby Congress members. But Occupy is a movement from the streets and from below. And there are other components of a successful social movement that hit all those different angles. So hopefully all those angles are going to be covered, but not necessarily by Occupy. And that's one of the reasons why it's really vital that we build these relationships as we're building this power, this collective power that's based – and I want to follow up on something that Heber said. This is a struggle. Like, it's not just a struggle against an enemy. It's a struggle amongst ourselves. The good thing is it's a beautiful struggle amongst ourselves as we try and learn how to work and grow together. And it's not easy, but, you know, it's a fantastic dilemma to have, and it's a dilemma that we didn't have 2 years ago. And that's true. One of the most invigorating things that I feel right now is that, as difficult as it is, as someone who's been working at this for most of his life, I think it's inspiring. I think it's fantastic.
Let's go back to the phones. Okay, Lila, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say I remember my first impression from Baltimore. Boarded houses, empty streets, no car. No cars, no people, no kids, only boarded windows, boarded doors. Later I saw each second store is this bail bond store and the big prison downtown. Excuse me, you are right, guys. This is not the future that we deserve, you know? Mm-hmm. So it has to be done something. Mm-hmm.
410-319-8888. We have another one of the Occupy people on the air, but let's go to a listener first and then go to Iris. Christopher, you're on the air.
Okay. First, I'd like to say thank you, Mark. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
Okay. It's wonderful. Welcome. That the movement regarding the youth jail has gained a great deal of momentum and has garnered support from diverse people and groups. But without a law, and I want to be clear on this, but without a law or order, you know, absent an executive order or legislation, there's nothing to hang our hats on right now.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning political support is needed.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first protest, Youth Justice Sunday. It was about a year and a half ago. And the only elected official that was willing to speak out and show support, as always, was Delegate Jill P. Carter. You know, what efforts, you know, are being made to work with her on legislation? You know, not only to stop the jail, but to redirect funds to school construction or other better uses. You know, I know she has discussed legislation, you know, regarding, you know, this as insurance.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Peter Brown.
You know, out of all of the elected officials in Annapolis, Delegate Jill P. Carter has been, at least in my estimation, our greatest ally in Annapolis. And you're right, she put in legislation on last year to put a moratorium on the youth jail. And we were down there testifying at the hearing. The Baltimore City delegation had a hearing on that, and we testified in support of her bill. And I can't put into words how appreciative I am for Delegate Carter, because when nobody else will answer the phone, she will. The wonderful thing about this continued force and pressure that we're putting on others is that now others are trying to come alongside to support as well. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, you can be mad that they weren't there from the starting line, or you can be thankful that you put enough pressure on them to say, okay, we want to join in now too. And so when I hear people like Senator Kathy Pugh, and she wrote up a piece where she made clear her position against the jail, when I, you know, hear at that Youth Justice Sunday, even though Delegate Carter was the only one that spoke, City Councilman Carl Stokes was present. Mm-hmm. Current council president, Jack Young, he was mm-hmm. present at Youth Justice Sunday. And so the numbers are growing, and more people are saying, you know, We want to give our legislative support to this, too. But you're exactly right. And Delegate Carter has been the one that's been most supportive of us. And I'm just thankful that that crowd is growing. Me and Mike were talking earlier that we got to have the legislative piece there. We got to stay in the streets. We got to have the meetings with the community. We got all of these are still on the table. If we think we're going to go one avenue and knock this thing out, we're sadly mistaken. So we're thankful to have a diverse enough group where we got all of that going on.
John, you want to comment? John Carden?
Yeah, well, I would just caution everybody to realize that it's not necessarily the person out there speaking the loudest or trying to cause as much trouble with whether it be, executive legislation from the executive branch who's necessarily doing the most. I'm not suggesting that being a strong outward proponent of this is not a wonderful thing. That Delegate Carter may be doing, but there are other people behind the scenes who could be just as helpful making sure that things are happening. For example, the year-long moratorium that was promised on the building of the center was in fact carried through, and I can guarantee you that it had nothing to do with any of the delegates that were simply advocating for it. It had to do with some people higher up in the food chain. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'll suggest, Mark, going back to the previous conversation, is while the state has relatively little jurisdiction in terms of it's more of a federal issue in terms of dealing with predatory lending, the state and many delegates and senators in Annapolis have been championing different types of legislation to assist people in dealing with all their mortgage troubles and other home ownership issues. I can tell you specifically that my colleague, Delegate Dana Stein, who also works as Executive Director of Civic Works in the city, has been incredibly progressive thinking in how to help people who get out from underneath of difficult mortgages. And I would ask the guys who seem to have great knowledge to make sure they contact their delegates and their senators and offer them some expertise in how to craft legislation that will help whether it be extend people's ability to get mortgages or to refinance mortgages, like the 365-day legislation of Councilwoman Clark. But that kind of thing we can maybe work on at least tangentially in the House of Delegates.
Thank you, John. 410-319-8888 is number here. Let's go to Gene. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm not a one percenter, but I'm certainly, probably top 5% earner, especially in Baltimore. And I'm in real estate, and we invest and own real estate and and so I've come from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas I agree with the anger, and among my colleagues we share the same anger at Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, JP Morgan, you name it, down the line. But it doesn't help, I think, this Occupy Wall Street, this protest movement to alienate people like me who are successful and who share, right? My view of the world, if someone took out a loan and if they knowingly, and they know this, right? People knew these liar loans. They knew they were signed documents that weren't accurate, right? So if someone loses their home because they signed documents, which is fraud, and they're losing their home, they should lose their home. But I'm at the same time, I believe that folks from the banking industry that we're doing these conduits, and I won't get very technical on you guys, but these guys on Wall Street was dicing and slicing these loans and selling off, and they were cheating each other, right? They should be held responsible. So we're angry. We're angry at that too, but I just think the Occupy Wall Street 99% are attacking us fiscally conservative folks, and you're losing allies. Because what angers me, as someone who's from Baltimore, my daughters represent fourth generation Southeast Baltimore. I find when I hear the delegate talk about different issues, federal and what they can do here, look in our own backyard. Martin O'Malley Rawlings all supported about 10 years ago a bill that allowed the Marriott Hotel, H&S Bakery, to pay taxes. You know what they pay for? Does anyone on this right now that's on this on the radio there know how much the Marriott Hotel pays a year in taxes?
Yes, we do. But go ahead.
$1.
Right.
Very little.
$1. Now, is that W.H. Bush? No. Martin O'Malley, wouldn't you think that every problem that we face in this city is the Republicans' problems? We cause these own problems, right? Rawlings renegotiates the pensions for the people who defend us, right? People who put out fires for us. But then she won't renegotiate these pilot tax-free. Marriott Hotels pays a dollar. Let's protest that type of stuff. Stuff that
we already
control,
are.
Yeah, we definitely
right?
are.
And so, look, you would be have folks like me, and again, I have lunch almost every day with business colleagues, and we say, we sound alike. And also, but as soon as you take it to all of a sudden to those of us who are successful, and you kind of alienate us sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of times, with the language being used. But let's just start at home. Let's go down. Call Martin O'Malley to task.
All right, well,
Rawlings to task about these things.
Yeah.
Issues that we can control here, because as Cardin said, a lot of these things are federal. We're not going to do anything about it.
So, anyway, let me just let some of our guests come kind of have dialogue with you here, because the time limitations, we have some other callers to get to as well. But what thoughts do you have for Gene? Go ahead.
Oh, well, first off, partly the 1%, yeah, like you said, you don't necessarily represent that 1% that we're necessarily talking about. So I kind of feel like at some point you're taking it to heart for no reason. But also at the same time, with the fact that the people who represent the Occupy movement as a whole in New York, in Baltimore, around the country, period, we are those working class. We are the working class people who have to deal with day-to-day issues that you might not necessarily deal with. You're a real estate agent. You help people buy homes, but do you necessarily, or not even you, do real estate agents necessarily educate the buyer on the things that they need to look out for when they're signing these contracts? If that isn't necessarily happening, then that is an issue first and foremost. So I just kind of feel like a lot of the elite people, or people who make six figures, you know, $1 million a year, whatever the case may be, are kind of blaming the victim when part of it is miseducation and ignorance going on within the community, because people refuse to give us the things that is needed for us to not be tricked by these real estate brokers, or to, when we go in a room with a politician, let them sweet talk us into believing something that isn't necessarily true. And just overall, I just want people to get out of the blaming the victim mindset.
Right. Can I just jump in for one second, because I got to go.
Wait, let me just let Michelle have a quick say, because we only have like 5 minutes left. I'm going to get to Iris's question.
Okay. So, I mean, those of us that occupy our homes believe that housing is a human right.
Amen.
In a city like Baltimore, where we have over 40,000 vacant houses.
47,000.
Okay. And we have a ton of homeless people. We have constantly usually about 30,000 people who are on the waiting list for Section 8 and affordable housing. We would rather see a home occupied by a person rather than owned by a bank and sit vacant. And that's fiscally irresponsible, to let banks and their greed just sit on those homes and wait until the housing prices go up, and then they can sell them, because that actually is creating problems for us as taxpayers of Maryland. Nobody wants to see anybody get a handout. Everybody's so worried that somebody bought a house that they couldn't afford, and they made this mistake, and they took this gamble, and now we're trying to help them out. But in reality, when there's a program that helps people stay in their homes, it actually helps all of us out. The banks already got their TARP money for making these risky loans. What have the homeowners got? That's what we're fighting for.
Mark, just 30 seconds. I just want to say that, Gene, you are a poster child for my public funding of campaigns legislation to try and get special interest money out of elections, and so that the Patarakises or whomever, while they can make these contributions, if people would have publicly funded campaigns, then we wouldn't have to be involved encumbered by special interest influences.
It was John Carlin. And Gene, thanks for your call. Appreciate your voice being on the air with us today. And let's go to Iris. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks a lot for taking my call. Mm-hmm. How y'all doing tonight?
Hi, Good. Iris.
So I wanted to just quickly, first of all, thank you, Nicole. I think you handled that really particularly well, because I feel like the thread that ties both of these issues together and a lot of the issues that the Occupy movement has been dealing with is poverty. Last night when I was in jail for the youth jail's occupation, two of our cellies were 18-year-olds, one still in high school, one recently graduated, and we got into a very interesting conversation about how much of the time in Baltimore City schools is on discipline. And I'll give you an example of a very bright young man I taught last year and this year. Sometime a few months ago, he always came to class. He always came to class. He's always a little bit, you know, I don't know. But he always came to class, and he mostly participated well, has really interesting ideas, stopped coming to class, or at least stopped coming on time, and then stopped coming at all. And then I and a few other teachers realized that he was wearing the same clothes every day, and what he was actually doing was coming to school, but walking around the building and finding, you know, a handful of chips from this person and a handful of candy from another person and a sip of somebody else's soda, and that was, in fact, what he was coming to school basically to eat, because there was clearly
Iris, we're almost out of time, so I...
People can't learn if they're hungry. We've got to solve these problems by really going to the root of them. We've got to hold these banks accountable. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So, I first of all, I want to thank Delegate John Carlin for joining us.
Thank
and
you.
Look forward to more heightened and interesting conversations with our elected officials in the course of the next bunch of months as we keep covering the Occupy movement.
And we want to engage that conversation on Saturday at Silburn Arboretum with the mayor's budget forum.
Is it this Saturday?
It's this Saturday, 10 to 2.
Okay,
yep. 10 to noon. 10 to noon this Saturday at Silburn Arboretum.
Because I had a week off, so I'm glad you said that. So I want to thank that was Mike McGuire, who was arrested yesterday's protest, member of Red Edmonds Collective, and the pastor, Heber Brown, of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. And you can read what he has to say at faithinactiononline.com.
Can I just ask, too? Preachers are blowing up my computer here. Pastor@pleasanthope.org. Hit me up, preachers. The clergy are coming together. It's our turn to step up. Pastor@pleasanthope.org. And thank you so much, Mark, for the opportunity.
And Lila Cara, thank you for coming to the studios. And I hope that you soon have a place to rest your head that is yours.
Thank you.
Good to have you in the studio with us. Michelle Moore, Occupy Our Homes organizer. Nicole Cheatham, youth organizer with the Baltimore Algebra Project.
Yeah, can I just say one thing?
We're out of time. So in 10 seconds.
Youth Justice Sunday will be April 1st this year. Come out, come support the jail issue as well as youth justice as a whole.
And we'll be back to that. We'll come back to that before April as well, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being here, folks. Stay with us. We'll be right back, and we're going to switch gears and talk have one of our Urbanite Radio stories and wonder if you're a commuter and what that does to you. Stay with us.